Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. I always feel that having the opportunity to do my programming, and for those of you that are regular listeners, know that I've been doing my shows for over 25 years. And I just feel so rich when I have an opportunity to interview people that have dedicated their lives to research, to study, and having to do with how we as individuals can understand we can take a better positioning with our health, with our mental attitudes, with understanding that as human beings, we do have value and purpose, even though sometimes life can be very, very harsh. My guest this evening is David Dalton. Now, David has put together an absolutely phenomenal book. It's called Advanced Flower Essence Healing, New Frontiers in the Field of Bach Flower Remedies. Now, I know for so many of you, you may be very familiar with Bach Flower Remedies. I have a limited knowledge about it, and I know it's been, you know, many, many years that this has been utilized and enjoyed by literally millions of people around the world. But what David has done is put into context the details, the information that enables you as a lay person to be able to understand how, why, when, and where these applications of knowledge and understanding can be utilized. And this is for any person at any level of life with an awareness that expands your thinking and understanding about the integration of nature, her plants, her trees, so much more than what we ever could have imagined brings a harmony and balance into our life. David Dalton, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
David, you are a man that has had so many special experiences relative to working with plants. Now, your book is very, very comprehensive. And before we started our conversation, I asked you how many years it took you to put all of this together. And you said 40, which I totally get. But it was a year and a half that you were able to put all of this beautiful layout of information regarding your life's work and the work of many other people that you have complimented in the book with their knowledge, and especially Dr. Bach. What was the initial aspect that brought you into being aware that this was your calling?
That's a good question. In 1987, I think my daughter Miranda was 4 years old, and she developed a rash on the crooks of her arms and the backs of her knees. And we tried all of the medical interventions, and we tried homeopathy, and we tried diet, and nothing worked. And around then, I was discovering that there were some new flower essences being made, and there was a channeled book called Flower Essences and Vibrational Healing. And I looked through the book and I found four essences for eczema. And that was banana, saguaro cactus, redwood, and loofah. And I ordered those, the only place you could get them back then, which was Pegasus Products. And I gave them to Miranda, and we actually put them on, you know, these sores, which were red and weepy. And in 6 days, the rash cleared up and it never came back. And I thought, I had an interest then in flower essences, but I thought, boy, if they can do this to the skin, what else can they do? And that's my initial push into this field.
What I wanted to say is this is the situation with your daughter actually was a trigger for this curiosity. And the curiosity just continued to grow, didn't it, relative to the more you read, the more you researched, and then in coming into an understanding with Dr. Bach's work. I mean, he died in the 1900s. He was born in the 1800s. This is a man that really stepped out of the boundaries of the environment in the, you know, 1800s, 1900s. And he's left a phenomenal legacy.
Right. Terrific. Yes. Dr. Bach's life was a quest for a question called, what is it that causes disease? And this quest led him to become a doctor and then an immunologist and a bacteriologist each step of the way, and then a homeopath each step of the way, gathering more than insight about what is it that causes disease. He was convinced that it wasn't physical things at a certain point. And he said, you'll never find the answer to disease if you look on the physical level because there aren't physical causes. And so this is where he began to construct the whole idea of flower essences and the personality and changing the personality to mitigate disease.
This is something that more and more, I think, medical science is becoming aware of. This is not woo-woo. This is very, very real. And the reason I know it's real is because I've experienced it myself. And when I say I've experienced things myself, it is I knew certain physical conditions that I went through, especially when I was younger, was due, number one, to stress. Number two, there was a sense of grief and failure that was going along with it. Our emotions are mental processes. We're a very complex situation as human beings, and we've become very disassociated from ourselves in so many respects. But when you started in this work, you found that there were many different events that were triggered, situations that were triggered because of the use of flower essences. And you talk about in 2006 that you were alone in Kampala, Uganda, and your story about your near-death experience in Africa was quite a profound one. Would you share that with my audience?
Yes. I was in Africa to make flower essences. I was curious as to what essences from different parts of the world would be useful for. When I went to Kampala, everything went wrong, you might say. There, my camera was stolen from my luggage. The bowl that I brought to make the essences was broken. The bottles that I had mailed 6 weeks before, they weren't there. And then, worst of all, they weren't accepting any credit cards that I had. They only accepted Visa. I only had MasterCard. And then the cash I had, they didn't accept that because there had been a counterfeiting episode a few years before. So I was basically alone, stranded in Uganda by myself. And so after about 4 days trying to resolve some of these things, the stress that I was absorbing from it, the worry, the anxiety, was causing some heart palpitations and sleeplessness. And one night I was lying there and my heart kind of went boop, 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 and then it stopped. And I was like, and then I started going into this tunnel. And I could see shapes on either side of the tunnel. And I thought I was probably dying and I was just trying to surrender to that. And then they, then everything reversed, and a voice, very distinct voice, you know, not a little voice like you hear, well, that small, still voice. This was like Barry White, you know, and told me that I was not dying, and that I wasn't there by mistake, and it wasn't an ego trip, and that everything would work out. And so I woke up the next morning, and I felt calm, and the voice stayed with me and told me what to do, told me who to talk to, told me where to get a camera, supplies, how to get money. Everything from that point worked out. So for the next 3 to 4 weeks, you know, I was able to find a driver to take to the western part of Uganda where I was looking for the flowers at, and you know, I got home safely. That's a small capsule of the story. It was very profound. The voice disappeared when I got home, and I'm just very grateful for that whole experience. You know, it taught me something about life, something about surrender, something about death.
Mm-hmm. It was a very, very powerful happening in your life. Now, you have been in this work for over 40 years, and you have really been an investigator in your own way and a researcher. This is very, very important for people to understand. We're not talking about woo-woo stuff here. We're talking about very real substances, very real realities, and looking at the essences of the plants, which many indigenous populations were very much aware of. In fact, I recall a special program that was done by the Smithsonian Institution many years ago, and they had a big crew that was going into Africa. I do not remember what part of Africa, and they mentioned how one of the individuals they interviewed, because they called them witch doctors. They didn't call them shamans necessarily. They had a very dramatic wrong label put on them. But these were people that used the natural plants in Africa. And to their amazement, one of the, I'll call them an African shaman, that person had to memorize 3,000 different plants. So their training, in, or this particular person's training, and this is many years ago, that was so extensive because they did not have what Western thinking, medicine processes, they didn't have that. So they were able to assist people by understanding the way the plants, the trees, you know, worked, and even earth essences that were necessary. And you go into the detail regarding the Advanced Flower Essence Healing publication that you have just recently come out with and the new frontiers with it. And this is something that is really at the core of any pharmaceutical product. But it is fascinating how, because of its process and what is done, it is, it's amazing, its subtleness just really can have such a big effect on people. And this is what I was amazed about. And you have over 200 essences from 16 different states and approximately 34,800 hours of working with people individually with their own particular processes physiologically. And you said there's so much we don't know, but look at how much we have been able to learn. And you say we can't have assumptions. We have to really become more educated about the natural world. And over the many years that you've been engaged in this, have you had very strong opposition to anything that you have brought forth?
No. And I would say it's because we're very careful. I work very deeply with a lot of people. I see about 20 to 25 people a week. And when I say careful, we, one, don't make any promises. Two, we don't make any claims. And three, we're very careful to follow the FDA standards and all of the bottling that we do. So I would say no strong opposition.
Well, and I think many times when people are educated and when they have a chance, then this is what your book does, to really understand what's going on here, it is very special. And it's dealing with energy in a way and manner that sometimes, because it's not physically tangible, it can be perceived as being woo-woo, and it's not.
We have nothing to do with woo-woo. We're basically finding out what's wrong with people and following a careful process of unlocking a person's past and its effect on their health and their behavior and attitude in the present. And we're very systematic about it, which is something that I wanted to share in the book, a system, a structure, a scaffolding for, just this work, which has up to this point been very individualized. And, I guess the other word is hidden. That might be the only opposition, that people don't know about flower essences. They don't understand them. They don't understand the potency. They don't understand how they can affect illness and disease.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Now, when Dr. Bach, when he passed away, he left this phenomenal legacy, which has been expanded dramatically. You mention a number of people in your book that have actually, starting in the 90s, three women, Kate Gilday, Pam Montgomery, and Gail Ulrich. Who are these ladies, and how did you become acquainted with them?
So these are three very dynamic herbalists. Gail has since passed away. And back in the 90s, they had taken the initiative to organize a flower essence conference, the first one ever in the area. And they continued to do that for several years afterwards. So these are just very forward-looking, hardworking, and inspired women who just kind of took the bull by the horns and started to bring people together and, find people who could speak. And so I was contacted on the phone by Kate Gilday before the first conference, and she asked me to come and speak.
What you bring into your book right at the very beginning, the very first segment of your book, and there's five segments that are in the book, and by the way, we are going to be having David back on so we can go into these various segments and the information that he has within them. Flower Essences Today is the title of a chapter in your book, and they're used, the Bach essences are used all over the world. And in Europe, it is very common for people to be given suggestions of essences to use. And it's very much more comfortable for Europeans to deal with what we call homeopathy and flower essences, but there's so much more than that. Here in the United States, it's been a very slow process to gain that knowledge and understanding. And in the UK, there is the BFVEA, which stands for the British Flower and Vibrational Essences Association, and people can check that out. But this is global knowledge. This isn't something that's just exclusive to a few people. Have you traveled to Europe to share what it is that you've learned?
Most of my travel has been to make essences. So I've been to Europe, Ireland specifically, three times to make essences from Ireland. The sharing of the work is actually just beginning now. I think for me, the work has been trying to understand how to make essences, how to research them, how to discover what they're for, how to use them, and how to use them in a way that produces change in a person, not that makes them feel good or palliative, but actually produces change, meaning the effects of the past are no longer haunting the present, physically, mentally, emotionally. I think trauma is a big part of the work that we're doing now, understanding how trauma not just lives in the past, but lives in the present through metaphors. The old saying, well, I married my mother or I married my father, it continues. Many people have old petty tyrants in their lives that are metaphors of someone from the past. So we can use essences to change the imprints of the past, and we can also use different kinds of essences to change behaviors in the present so that people are stronger, safer, making wiser choices, and not being pulled in and triggered to familiar pain.
Mm-hmm. One of the very significant arenas of concern you have is the fact that there aren't any standards for essences, and you talk about how you have used them, various ones, but you find that there has to be a real consideration regarding how the essences are developed, and some of them have a potency to them and some of them don't. And this can be a conundrum for people. Right. And they said it's a lack of consistency in the quality of their products. So one of the things that you give in your book is you say standards for flower essence practitioners and flower essence producer. This is very, very important. Let's discuss that for a minute.
Well, it's a kind of a double-edged sword. You know, what's wonderful and remarkable about flower essences is we've had the freedom to research, to discover. These are unusual and little known and newly discovered agents for health. And so having standards, so the double-edged sword is one, you have freedom. The other side of the sword is everybody's doing things differently. And people have their own kind of sense of, like, this is the way to do it, and this is the way I do it. And so, you know, my feeling is some standardization would be very useful to the whole flower essence world. And I'm not saying to squelch the freedom that people have, but just that there are certain things, basic things, that are considered before somebody puts a flower essence up for sale on an internet, which anyone can do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people are reselling other people's essences in combinations with different words. Some people are copying other people's work. And anyway, nobody's watching that kind of thing. And so the problem is someone might learn about flower essences from someone who doesn't have the same standards, and they get an erroneous experience. They get not a good experience. And so my whole feeling is this standardization is to promote consistency in the promise that we make to people about the experience they're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
So I can, with my essences and the people I do and the structure I have and the process I have, I can say to people, this is what's going to happen, and here are some things that might happen, and here's what you need to do. Here's what I'm going to do for you. And, or I can say, well, this essence is likely to do this when you take it. And so be careful of this, be careful of that. So I can do that in my practice, but I can't do that for everybody else in the field. And the problem is, you know, there are now thousands of people who are doing this because, well, I don't know, or you might say an herbalist, like, well, this is something that's a lot easier to make, it's easier to bottle, it's easier to preserve, it doesn't cost as much to put online, and nobody else is competing with it. And so there's that kind of option. So I just think standards, and I'm not saying these standards, but I'm just suggesting some, and I'm looking at both Brazil and the UK, who have developed some standards for people and developed a guild, and you know, we can look towards those as models. And you know, I'm not sure how this would happen, but you know, my suggestion is that, you know, standards would definitely help the field.
You go into quite a bit of detail in your book, Advanced Flower Essence Healing, New Frontiers in the Field of Bach Flower Remedies. And the process that you have used, that you feel, and you've used it for many years, you feel it's very important to use either the sun or boiling method. And you go into a great deal of detail on this. You're very, very, very clear about why things should be done, the kind of water that should be used, the flowers. You don't need to have buckets of flowers, but it is very, very important to have some brandy or grape vodka. And I'm just going through this just very lightly. And you, when I was reading this and I was looking at it, I thought, okay, this is something that is extremely important. And Dr. Bach had found that this was a process that worked very, very well. And when you think about his background as an immunologist, look at how immunotherapy is very, very important in today's world. We have finally found that, though there were a few people, but now there are people that are understanding that wellness has to do with a strong immune system. And we've got all of these things that in the last 10 years have begun to, you might say, reach the lay person in everyday life. But you are meticulous about how you want people to understand that when you're working with these essences, that they are very, very, if you will, delicate. And the process is very, very clearly, again, I'm repeating myself, but this is interesting. I was fascinating about the rain essence that was discovered, you know, by, I don't know who, if I don't know if it was Dr. Bach, but you used a lot of his techniques when you were in Uganda. You, however, changed the timing on the process. You had lots of sun, but you didn't leave it out in the sun like for 2 hours. I'm in the Pacific Northwest. When we get sun, we just do a tap dance here because we often have a lot of rain, which our spring has been very, very much heavy with rain. So it's gray clouds and the blue skies of Seattle. That song, you might say, we wish it could be sung more regularly, because so often the skies are gray. Well, that's normal for our area. That is very normal. So you may or may not have sun, depending on where you live. In Africa, in Uganda, you had an abundance of it, and that made a difference. And so adaptability, using the processes that you recommend for this, is part of it, isn't it?
Yes. We often get stuck in formulas without looking at where did the formula come from. So Dr. Bach's original flowers were made in England, 3 hours in the morning sun. But one other less known fact is Dr. Bach his first essences were dewdrops that were on flowers that had been in the sun. And you might say that it takes about 3 hours in England for the dew to evaporate. So in Uganda, it's right near the equator. The sun was very strong. It was very hot. And I noticed there was the beginning of evaporation that started to happen after an hour. So I changed. I changed the formula a little bit for the time. That 3 hours in the morning sun is still a really good place to start. And with all of my students, I recommend that they start by making things in a traditional way. And if they have intuitions to do things differently, make sure that they've tried the traditional ways first. Dr. Bach brought a whole system in from nothing existed, and then he brought this thing in, which is why I spent some time talking about him and consider my work a continuation of his.
Mm-hmm. Also, you talk about how important it is to store the essences very carefully, and I was intrigued when you talked about an individual, which was one of your students, that knew she was to keep the essence away from sunlight and heat, refrigerators and medicine cabinets, and not leave it in a car when it was summertime. And she had stored her essences in a cabinet with some incense. And what occurred just absolutely fascinated me, because the essences are stored typically in dark bottles, sometimes in blue bottles, and they're sealed with the dropper cap. And what happened with hers?
Well, she made the mistake of having incense in the cabinet. All of her essences, every one of them, there were probably 100 bottles, began to taste like incense. So somehow the essences, the sensitivity of them, absorbed that frequency and that taste. So, you know, we know that heat will evaporate the brandy. We've learned a whole bunch of things. You know, if you don't have a good quality rubber stopper on the bottle, that the brandy is going to volatilize and evaporate, and you can actually, you know, look at the volume go down. So having a good tight bottle, keeping it in someplace away from heat, away from strong smells, away from places like the refrigerator or the bathroom is important. And mm-hmm. having your own cabinet is advised.
Well, we've just touched upon a little bit of what's in your book. And before we started the program, I said I wanted to have you back as a guest, and we were going to discuss more about the advanced flower essence healing, new frontiers in the field of Bach flower remedies. And I'm so delighted that you said yes. So we are going to have David back again. And the reason I think that this is important is that we need to know what our options are. And David, I want to be sure that we give people your website information. So if they're interested, they can check out your website when you have classes and anything and everything else that you may have available. Your website is Delta, D-E-L-T-A, gardens.com, deltagardens.com. David, I'm really looking forward to our next conversation, which will be in the month of May, and I'm so grateful that we're having a chance to have more of a conversation about flower essences, because I do think they serve an extraordinarily valuable purpose. Thank you for being with me this evening.
Thank you. The pleasure has all been mine. Thank you very much.
We are saying goodbye to David Dalton, his book, Advanced Flower Essence Healing. You know, there's so much that I have had the privilege of becoming aware of due to dedicated people like David. And I so appreciate it has taken them a lifetime, if you will. Think about it. They're being dedicated to research and learning and keeping records on things for over 40 years. No matter what the profession is, to be able to pass along the knowledge is vitally important. Education is something that is never, ever in a positioning of knowing at all. In fact, what we're finding today, whether it has to do with flower essences or archaeology, quantum science, we are having to unlearn a lot of attitudes and biases that have been in place for literally thousands of years. So many times in environments, dependent on what historically is going on and if there is a war or what have you, there's all of this sometimes it seems to get buried. And it's people like David, regardless of whatever the environment may be, that says it's not enough. I've had this experience or that experience, and I want to know more. And this is something we need to be able to encourage, not just with our children, but also with ourselves, because learning is an ongoing process. And it is just such a delight for me to be able to encounter the thousands of people that I have met from all walks of life, all economic environments, all kinds of cultures. Maybe they've gone through the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever it is. They're saying, let me share with you what I've gone through. That's the gift of a book. And, you know, I have encountered so many people, including me, whose life was changed because of a book. And I think of when I was in the sixth grade, my school ended up having a library. And we had never had a library at the school before. And I remember the very first book I checked out of that library. And it was about a blizzard. I do not remember the title of the book. But what I do remember is the story that was in the book. And it was a pretty thick one. But I've been an avid reader from as long back as I can remember. And I can remember reading about this family that was in some place like the Dakotas or, you know, an environment they were having severe blizzards, and this was a winter that broke all records. People were dying and animals were dying right and left because they were frozen to death right wherever they stood. And the storm had come in so very, very fast, and this family, and I think it was four or five people in the family, they were down to one to two potatoes that they had stored in their root cellar. The blizzard lasted, I don't know for how many days. It was very, very bad. And I can remember when I was reading their story, I felt like I was living it. And I thought to myself, I live in Southern California. The sun shines all the time. We don't have a worry about that. We don't get blizzards. We don't get snow. Well, guess what? In Los Angeles, they have had a little bit of that. They've had an abundance of rain. The climate has been altering to a degree, but generally, it still is what you'd consider the sunshine state. But here we have, in our world today, an amazing amount of information that we can have access to. And that's why, in doing the programming, I like to think that maybe in hearing the stories, that people do in meeting the author through my television show. And like the author's showcase, I'm going to be doing that again, where you have a chance to see via Zoom or in person. You're going to be able to see the authors, and we're working on the editing. I was sick with this virus that I got, and so consequently, it has taken, it's been about a 14-day journey. And by golly, the woman that was assisting me in doing the editing, we were going to be meeting and getting that all together so we could make it public what was going on at the first author showcase that we did. And she and her whole family ended up getting sick. So by golly, it's been held off, for a while. But when we can share through conversation what we know, we're never going to know it all, but many times we have to change our perceptions of things. And that's not always easy to do, because all of us are indoctrinated quite heavily in one way or another. And to be able to stand back and say, I wonder if I should explore this. I wonder if I should do this, that, or the other. Well, I would just say, be patient. Understand that learning is a journey, and it is a journey of discovering yourself, but also of being aware of the world and the knowledge that is accessible that can change your mind in an amazing way. It can expand your thinking. Do I have a passion for learning? Absolutely. My husband said once, he said, my God, if you had been able to go to college, you never would have left. Well, I have had the fortune of, because of doing this programming, of getting a PhD and then some, actually multiple PhDs, because of the richness of what people have been willing to share in writing. And I can go back and I can check on the information. And sometimes the information might change. Is that bad? No. It is understanding that learning should be a joy. And that whatever is that that calls to you, just like with David Dalton, there are those aspects of life that speak to us that say, this is what you should do. Oh, my goodness. Do it. Don't run away from it. Don't worry about other people's opinions or attitudes. Invest in yourself. Well, we're going to take a little bit of a shift here. And I wanted to say to those of you that are regular listeners, welcome back. And to those of you that are new, I want to say welcome, because this program is about bringing forth the unique, the weird, the unusual, education on so many different levels, and I'm so delighted that you are able to spend some time with me. And remember, the programming is available to you 24/7. The Donna Sebo Radio Show, which is this program that I'm doing. We have Warriors for Peace that comes on every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. And then, of course, the regular show is 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. And then the Donna Sebo television show, special editions. And we are in the process of scheduling our the 21st and 22nd episode, which is going to be coming up. We're going to be doing filming of that. And episode 20 is available right now for your viewing and also your listening pleasure. And that's up on my website, DelphiInternational.com, also on our television channel, YouTube, that is available, again, 24/7, free of charge, and you are going to have the opportunity to listen to it more than once, meeting people one way or the other that perhaps can inspire you to step into a newer part of yourself. Also, if you're an author or if you know of someone who is an author that would like to be featured on my radio and or television programming, all you have to do is contact me through my website, DelphiInternational.com, and I will respond. And what will be necessary is for you to send a copy of your publication. I need the actual copy. I do not read PDFs. So if you do that, just send me a copy to the Donna Sebo Show, and Sebo is spelled S-E-E-B-O, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Again, send the publication. Please include your contact information. If you have a business card, stick it inside the book or staple your information inside the front page of the book. I get anywhere from 10 to 15 publications a week. So that's very important for you to be aware of. If I don't have contact information, I'm not going to be able to reach you easily. So again, The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Well, I have a different topic I wanted to discuss with you. And one of those topics, and if I have a chance, I'm going to give you one of my favorite recipes. Yes, you know me. I'm a foodie. So I love sharing recipes. Oh, don't forget, I wanted to let you know, towards the end of this month, we are going to be doing another appearance. And that is going to be at the BEPC event, which is semi-annually. And it's an event I have been participating in as a speaker and also as someone who is doing many sessions. I'll have a big abundance of books with me. So just understand that this is a very special event. Now, it's the 25th and 26th of this month. And it is at the Kent Commons in Kent, Washington. And you can find out more by going to the BEPC.org. And that is a wonderful website. They have gone through so many different adjustments and changes. And shortly, we're going to be having a conversation with Holly and Lorelei Shamayo, and we are going to be discussing what's going to be going on there. So I'll be sure to let you know when that information is going to be available to you. But check out their website, and you will find that that is going to be quite an event. It's very colorful. There is so much that is going on. It is absolutely wonderful. So that is coming up. And I've got television filming that I'm doing this month, and I'll keep you appraised of that as well. Okay, so we're taking this opportunity to shift into something that I thought was a nice compliment to our conversation about the Bach remedies. And this has to do with therapy. Now, people have different areas of interest with therapy. There's horse, you know, working with horses, equine therapy. There's working with all kinds of different animals. And there's a relationship of trust that has to be built. And there's a woman by the name of April. Her name is April Stewart. And I absolutely was fascinated with the fact that she had been in the military. And while she was in the military, she was sexually assaulted, ended up developing PTSD. Now, when you have that, regardless of what the circumstances are that contribute that situation of trauma, it really is a tough thing to work through. And she was married, and she said, I had a number of years where the PTSD did not have an intent, you know, it was there, but she was able to suppress it because she had her kids and other things that kept getting her sidetracked. Well, when she became an empty nester, as the term is often used, she said it was a challenge for her, a big challenge, because that had been submerged in the subconscious, pushed down by the conscious self into the subconscious, started to come up, bubbling. And she said, she and her husband had been very much involved with animal rescue. And interestingly enough, she acquired when she was finding the PTSD was coming back really strongly, she found that there were three Capuchin monkeys that needed help. Now, many times people will bring animals into their environments, reptiles, birds, and they really don't know how to take care of them, how to deal with them, and monkeys are not easy pets. And she said, these Capuchin monkeys, you don't ever want to adopt them. They're very, very independent, and they're spider monkeys, and they are very, very willful and can be very destructive. I've heard this from more than one source. She said, we have a large amount of land. They had 15 acres. And someone, when she found out about these monkeys and they rescued them, someone suggested, you need to start a monkey sanctuary. Now, how many of us in a million years would even imagine having a monkey sanctuary? That's the last thing I'd ever consider. Well, with April, it was like, okay, that's a good idea. So, yes, she ended up with her husband starting a monkey sanctuary. Now, they had to get accredited. They set up a nonprofit. They had a board of directors. Do you know that they were able to acquire, as a rescue animals, spider monkeys, marmosets, kinkajous, squirrel monkeys, and a genet. I've never heard of a genet, G-E-N-E-T. Never heard of that. The owners couldn't work with them. I mean, these are animals that belong in the wild. They don't belong in your home. This is not the way that they would live. So she said, we even had animals that were rescued from people that were breeding them. These animals sell for thousands of dollars. And it's really, these are people that just look at them as a commodity. They don't look at them as a living life that needs to be in its own space. And these monkeys, these different species that she had, you could never release them out into the wild because they had been raised in captivity. They just were not going to be able to adapt. They wouldn't. They'd have to be in environments that already are being threatened, whether it's the Amazon or Africa or wherever it might be. And she said, they're heavily traumatized. She said, I never expected that caring for monkeys would be so healing for me. She said, you hold their hand, you rub their arm. She said, I realized that working with the monkeys was far more important than allowing my PTSD and dwelling on the past to get to me. So she ended up going to the VA and started seeing a therapist. And that was a huge step for her because she had not been willing to do it before. And this one monkey, whose name is Louie, just had to be taken to the vet. So she takes him to the vet. And as she's in the process of doing that, she finds that there's a neighbor she comes in contact with, military veteran, PTSD big time. And he just absolutely loved her monkey, Louie. And he asked if he could volunteer to help take care of him. She said, sure. She said, other veterans are coming out and they're finding a sense of peace and they're healing as well. The biggest issue with PTSD is trust. And she said, you can rebuild trust by interacting with animals. And that is a fact, I know. She said, more than that, I have, because of working with the monkeys and working with animals, I've rebuilt trust in myself. She said, for a long time, I carried shame. Shame, guilt, and fear because of the assault that had occurred so many years before. She said, fear will steal too much from you if you let it, and you don't have to let it happen. And April Stewart is in her 50s. She is an Air Force veteran, and she has the nonprofit Gulf Coast Primate Sanctuary. So you can check that out if you like, the Gulf Coast Primate Sanctuary. I wanted to share her story because I feel that we need to know about people that they found solutions, they found options to work with. We can learn from them. We can share the information, maybe with someone that we know. And that is what this programming is all about. As you know, I really like to share recipes. Well, this is a recipe that is actually quite a simple one. It involves spinach, nuts, and cheese. And it's got a lot of flavor to it. So let me share this with you. You're going to need 2 slices of thick-cut bacon, and you need to chop it up. Or you can fry the bacon until it's crispy and then chop it up. You're going to need 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1/4 cup of minced onion, red or white, whatever you prefer, 2 green garlic cloves minced, or 2 regular cloves of garlic, 1/4 cup of walnuts, 1 bunch of spinach, coarsely chopped and washed, and 1/4 cup of feta cheese, cubed feta cheese, or fresh mozzarella cheese. I always add more cheese. I really love cheese. Okay, so this is how simple it is. Medium-sized skillet, medium-high heat. Of course, you're going to cook the bacon, like I said, and then make sure you drain it on paper towels. It needs to be nice and crisp because you're going to just crumble it up. And anyway, put that to the side. And your olive oil, you want to take all of the bacon fat, but maybe leave like 1 teaspoon in it because any bits of bacon that's there is going to add to the flavor. So the excessive oil you can, or the excessive fat, you're just going to take that out. Then you want to take the olive oil in that skillet, again, medium heat, saute the onion, the garlic, and walnuts until they soften. And then add your spinach and the nut and onion mixture. That's going to take a whopping 5 minutes, maybe. And then you add your bacon and your cheese and just serve it. It is delicious. Absolutely delicious. And it goes with any kind of meat. And it's just a nice accompaniment. And if you are someone that says, well, I'm a vegetarian, I don't do bacon, well, figure out what you'd like to substitute it with. But bacon does add the flavor, I will tell you. So regardless, you can adapt this recipe as you like. Now, you heard me mention garlic scapes. S-C-A-P-E-S. You're saying, what in the world is garlic scapes? Well, I'll tell you what. I didn't even know anything about garlic scapes. That's its title. It's green garlic, and it is a spring crop, and it's the juvenile stage of the garlic bulb itself, and they're sometimes called the scapes are sometimes called whistles, stems, flowers, spears, or tops, and it's just very, very young garlic, and it doesn't last for very long, that cycle when they come out. And the flavor is very, very delicate, so you always add it at the very end. But I just had to share that with you because I did not know anything about it, and it's something that, hey, every day I learn something new. Donna Sebo here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul, no matter who you are, no matter where you are. Don't ever give up that you are. Remember, you're on a journey of self-exploration, and you never know what amazing adventures you're going to have. Be unafraid of being the explorer of making your world, your life, a richer one. Donna Sebo here. Talk with you mañana. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.